Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2022. Today, the world of finance. As time goes on, we'll come back to some of these subjects over and over again. This is more of the overview of the subject you're getting right now in the course. But as time goes along, again, you'll see us go through this over and over. And as I cautioned you in the first lecture, the content that I say in class is not always in the book. I'm going to teach you terminology, and it starts today. And over the course of this class, on average, I probably bring up around 80 to 90 terms, new terms, and you're responsible for those for quizzes and exams, of course. Now, I'm going to start, this would be the first time that I actually produce a live fire podcast, and then those podcasts will begin to show up on Apple iTunes, or they call Apple Podcasts now, and they'll also show up in my own website. I'll go through that again on Monday so that you can see the content there, but it's isu-prof.com if you want to go there and see what it looks like. I should have these lectures up, the lecture up from today by this evening at some point, the first lecture of the semester here. It'll be lecture two. Lecture one was a massive failure for the recording equipment, so there's that. Now, as I had told you in the first class, every day I will start out by showing you the screens, as we call them. We look at the markets, how they're behaving, what's going on from one day to the next as far as the markets are concerned. And of course, what that means is that there's going to be terminology involved here. And there's also a conceptual framework. Understand that when I say markets, I could be talking about a number of different markets. Mostly people think in finance of ourselves that we are in the financial markets. Financial. But also there are other markets too. There is the physical, the goods and services markets, where you will probably spend your professional lives, and your private lives, you'll be doing most of your transactions in the private markets, not in the financial in the goods and services markets, I should say. But there are also other markets too. The commodities markets are out there as well. And there are several other kinds of markets out there too that are kind of difficult to explain exactly, but you'll see me focusing for at least some of this class on the financial markets. Now, market, it's simply a place where buyers and sellers come together to transact. A place where buyers and sellers come together to transact. A market is a place where buyers and sellers come together to interact. Now, you're going to find out something. If I repeat a definition twice, three times, four times, that probably means that I'm going to find some way to ask you about it on a quiz or an exam. So get these numbers down and also listen to the podcast, because sometimes you're going to miss one of these. Now, as far as the financial markets go, there are all kinds of those. We'll go through the different kinds of financial markets in this class. But one broad distinction that we can make in those in there are the bond markets versus the stock markets. Now, most people think of financial market as a stock market. Exciting, screaming, trading, yelling, buy, sell, this whole thing. Actually, interestingly enough, the bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market, but it is very rarely talked about because it is not sexy, it is not exciting, it is not volatile, it is much calmer. And it is much safer overall. The bond market, you understand this before we get started, and I'll repeat this over and over again. If you lend money to a corporation, you are actually buying a bond from that corporation. The bond is sold by the corporation. You buy the bond, and that is the money that the company is borrowing from you. That's how a bond works. It's nothing but a security. Stock is the same way. You buy stock. You probably won't ever do this. This is a primary market thing. You would buy stock from a corporation. The corporation would issue a stock certificate, and you would get that, and they would get the money from you. Now, that's not how these markets, stock markets and bond markets, usually work, though, for us. We never provide money to the companies themselves. We never do. In the stock market, when I show you the screen up here, that is merely buyers and sellers trading stocks with each other. The company is not a part of that. Its financials are always what drives those prices in that market, but the market itself that we see from day to day, well, Netflix went up by $2. That is nothing to do with Netflix as far as money goes. More people bought Netflix stock from other people than sold it. That's all there is to it. The market is a place where an equilibrium price is formed. In the stock markets, and to the same extent in the bond markets, and in the commodity markets, that price is forming every split second. Buying and selling is occurring. It is almost, and we're talking about hundreds of millions of individual transactions driven by forces beyond the power of any one of them. These are herd actions. You're seeing the results of the powers of the best in the world, the marginal investors, fighting back and forth on the price, up and down. You think you're good at stock, you're a genius at stock markets, and you can beat the best of them? Bullshit. You're dealing with the people who have computers all around them. They have years of experience. They have the fastest internet connections and the most powerful thinking machines on earth. As a matter of fact, it is so serious now that there are at least one in several companies that can see the price in the future. 100 milliseconds is about 80% accuracy. You can't beat that. Don't tell me you're a genius. Don't brag about, well, I do Robinhood. I've seen Wall Street. I've been on the floor of the exchange. It is insane. I mean, it used to be worse than it is now. Back in the day, they were a bunch of cokeheads fighting with each other, but stock and bond markets and all. No, seriously, it's still wild. I mean, but a lot of it is transacting on computers now, but there's still the open cry system. You're screaming at someone, buy this, buy that, sell this, sell that, and paper's still flying around. It's not quite as crazy as it used to be, but man, it's a wild place. But understand this, bond markets are safer than stock markets. Here's why. If you owe a company money, that company has to pay you what is due to you in the current period before the shareholders get one dime. We say that the shareholders have the residual claim and the bondholders have the prior claim. You see, if you're a stockholder and the company doesn't pay you a dividend, you, madam, you're a stockholder and I'm a company and I didn't pay you a dividend, you know what you can do to me? No, you can cry. I was a consultant. I had to go up there for these companies that weren't paying any dividends, and they had to do their annual shareholder meetings. And I mean, they put me out there to explain it to these angry shareholders. I had this one. It was a company that had been around for many years. It had died, and a private company inserted into it. And the first annual, it was a couple of shareholder meetings down. And I mean, there I am standing up there in front of the board of directors, and this woman just started flaming at me. She said, I've held this stock for 30 years, and I have never seen a dividend. Why are you not paying a dividend? You put out a press release that you actually made a profit last year. Why aren't you paying us a dividend? And I have to be nice to them. I have to say, look, bitch, I don't have anything here. I have to keep the money so that I can reinvest it. You see, the company doesn't have to even give you money if it makes money. It can reinvest it on your behalf to grow the company and increase your stock price. You could spend years sitting there with nothing for your stock investment. And you can't do a thing about it. Now, a bondholder, you know what a bondholder? If you are a bondholder and I don't pay you your annual interest payment, you know what you can do to me? You can shoot my dog, sell my Bible on Craigslist, and make my parents wear furries. That's what you can do to me. You can destroy me. You can just turn me off. That's what you can do as a bondholder. So you guarantee you the bonds are safer than stocks. That's why they are not volatile. They don't go bang, bang, bang. They stay quiet because there's more certainty of the payoff, and you know what the payoff is going to be. It's going to be your interest. With a stock, I mean, you could make a fortune on the stock, but you could also take what we technically call an ass bath on it. You don't know what's going to happen with that stock, and you can't do much about it except cry if it doesn't pay off for you. Now, you hear about the people who, well, I made money on Robinhood. I was a genius investor. Where every person who makes, I've got a system, and I've used these charts, and I spent a lot of money, and I'm intelligent about this bullshit. For every one that makes a fortune, there are 10,000 who make nothing and lose money. You'll hear about the one who makes a fortune. Hi, I made a fortune, and I'm going to show you how I made my fortune because you can be a genius just like me, except not as handsome. You never hear from the 10,000 said, hi, I got my ass kicked in the market, and I'm so poor that I can't afford the last two letters, so I'm P-O-P-O, and I'll show you how to do it too. They're not going to do that. You see, you're going to hear a biased information flow from the success. It's like lottery. They always talk about the person who made the multi-million dollar hit. They don't talk to you about the millions that are suckers and get fleeced every week by these agencies that take advantage of human nature. See, that's the thing is, you invest and you be careful. And I'm going to talk to you a lot about that. I'm going to show you the terminology. And we're going to, I'm not saying you're going to make a fortune. For God's sake, if you do, don't forget about me and my old age. But at the same time, this is a fun thing to look at. And I, just be honest with you, full disclosure, I am a long-term, I teach long-term strategies. You think in the long term. You're a responsible investor. You're investing for your corporation. You're investing for your family. You're investing for something that is way down the road. That requires that you don't think short term. You think about the long haul. You don't pee your pants if the market goes down. You don't think you're a genius if the market goes up. You just hold your position and keep growing with it. This was something that we were taught long ago in combat divisions, is that our purpose is to make the enemy scatter. We hold our position, we hold our line, we just keep moving forward and kill as many people as we can as we go along. Just hold the line, even if the friends right around you are dying. See, that's what you do in the markets too. You control yourself. You let the idiots freak out and sell everything, and then once they have sold it out, you just pick it up off the earth where it has fallen, and then you wait for it to go back up later. That's how you play for the long haul. And that's how I teach you how to do things. Corporate America is not an instantaneous day-by-day thing. It is a growing, living animal, just like you are, just like your families will be, just like everything else in this world that has enduring value. And that's an important point here. The difference between what I'm going to show you, which is the market price, and the other much more important, deeper thing called the intrinsic value. The intrinsic value is the long term. The market price is the instantaneous day-to-day. Over a long period of time, those instances make the long term. But you have to just keep your eye on the long term. But what we look at today, I can show you how this is sort of like a crystal ball. It's dark, but it can help you think about the future. But always remember, what has already happened has no meaning whatsoever for what's going to happen. The prices are forming in such a rapid way that they take in all information, and whatever happened in the past has already been impounded in the current price. You can't find anything about the past, the future from the past in these markets. They are that efficient. I don't know if I talked much about this, but this is called a Markovian process, stock and bond prices. These securities prices are Markovian. The future value has nothing to do with past values. It's like playing chess. the genius, you see he can play all these chess games at the same time. All he's doing is looking at his current position, because the optimal next move is where the board is now. It has nothing whatsoever to do with how the board got there. A famous story was from early in the conflict that became World War II. Merchant marine ships were trying to prowl across the Atlantic, and these damn German U-boats were just sinking them right and left, killing hundreds and thousands of merchant marines trying to get supplies over to Great Britain. And I mean, what could you do about it? And then there was someone who said, let's use stock markets. So what they did was they made an algorithm that translated the minute-to-minute stock price changes into changes in the course of the merchant marine fleets. Once they started doing that, the U-boats couldn't find them anymore, because even though the Germans are great mathematicians and always were, they can't predict it, because it is a random movement. And has the next place it's going to be has nothing to do with where it had been 10 minutes, 20 minutes before. That's the power of this. This all came from something called Brownian motion, which was actually the work of several mathematicians in the late 1800s. One became famous because of this. His name was Albert Einstein. His great relativity fame, that wasn't where he started. He started with this concept we're talking about now. Let me show you something. Let's look at the numbers here. Now, write down, pay close attention to what I say. These are quiz questions, test questions. You are seeing up here, hate those instant drop-down menus. Across the top, you're seeing three indexes, three financial indexes, one financial exchange, and one commodity market in play here. First things first, the absolute numbers mean nothing. Percentages are all that matters. Absolute numbers mean nothing. Only the percentages matter. Because, you see, if I tell you that I bought a stock for $10 and it went to $11, that's $1, okay? So that's a 10% gain. But if I buy a stock for $100 and it went up a dollar, that's trivial. That's a 1% gain. So you have to understand that that's part of this, is that you get out of the habit of thinking of absolute numbers and think in terms of percentages. And let the idiots think about the numbers. The Dow went down 600 points today, isn't that all? That was a trivial percentage drop. But, you know, that's the problem, is financial journalists are not all that bright. Now, another thing, too, is there are different kinds of markets. A market that is up and optimistic is called a bull market. A bull market. And you don't say bull. You say bull. If it's a market that's down or pessimistic, that's a bear market. You say bear. You can be a bullish or a bearish investor. You can be bullish on one stock. You can be bearish on a couple of other stocks. Some people are overall bull or bear. But you can, even a bear can be bullish, and a bull can be bearish, and all that. Green is good, red is bad, but you see, you have to understand that you can make as much money, if not more, in a bear market than you can in a bull market. Over the past 2 months, with an investment of $500 in a bear market taking bearish positions, I've made close to $4,000. You can make as much money in a bear market as a bull market. You know, well, this is an awful time. We're in a bear market. Yeah, for the bulls it's bad, but for the bears, that's wonderful, you know? I mean, think about it. Sure, a meteor hitting the ground and killing millions of people is terrible, But I mean, if I live through it, I go to the apartments and I can find some pretty damn nice shoes someone isn't going to need anymore. Does that sound harsh? Good. This is a market where we don't have sentiment. You don't have politics. You don't have, I feel, I think, I believe. You go cold, you go hard, and you go in with your fangs out and your head down. So now, madam, is this a, what kind of a market do you see right there? What are those numbers looking at, you see? Is that a bull or a bear market? What did you say? Did you say bull or did you say bull? It's a bull market today. I mean, this is bullish across. Now, understand here. Exchanges are actual trading floors electronically or physically. You see those pictures maybe of everyone yelling at each other, buy, sell, buy, sell. That's an exchange. Probably they were showing you the New York Stock Exchange. That is an actual exchange where many thousands and thousands of stocks are traded on a given representative platform by buyers and sellers for themselves or for their clients like you and me and pension funds and all that. An index is just a theoretical collection of stocks that reflects a part of a market. So when you see here, see that Dow 30? That's not a market. That's just an index of the 30 largest companies on Earth, or almost 30 largest, almost largest. In other words, when you look at that market, you're seeing what the sentiment is about the largest companies of the planet. The S&P 500 is an index of 500 very large, mostly multinational companies. It's kind of scary. 60 to 70% of the entire world's market value is in the Standard & Poor's 500. It's 500 stocks, and so that represents a broader index of the sentiment of the big companies. Not necessarily as large as the Dow companies, but they are. Most of you will actually probably work for or your corporation will be dependent upon one of the S&P 500 companies, Standard & Poor's 500. But it's just a theoretical portfolio. You could buy it if you had enough money to buy 500 stocks, or there are actually ways that you can even hold the whole Standard & Poor's 500 and not spend that much insane amount of money. I'll show you those, how you can do that later. Now, the NASDAQ is like the New York Stock Exchange, the American Stock Exchange. The National Association of Dealers Automated Quotes is an electronic exchange. That is small companies. You'll hear me use the term small caps. The small caps are these little companies, scrappy, risky AF, and they tend, and you're going to see the Dow moves, the S&P 500, NASDAQ, that's a Tasmanian devil. It's small companies. They're up and down. Oddly enough, there are a couple of giants on there. See, when I was a consultant, all of the work that I did, when I get companies, I get them public, they'd go public, then they'd have to get a listing on an exchange, and it was obvious these were small companies, so I got them listings on the NASDAQ. It's not easy to get listed. That was way too much like work back in the day. But at the same time, those getting there means that you have higher liquidity because traders can trade your stock. You can have stock in your company, but no one gives a crap because they can't trade it. This is the NASDAQ is for small caps. The Dow is for super large cap. And the S&P 500 is for large cap. Kind of, some of them are kind of medium cap. I mean, it's pretty sad when you say that it's middle cap when you're talking about market cap of $50 billion or something like that. But we're living in a world, I'm going to show you something here in a few minutes that'll, I hope, will completely diminish your self-worth. But anyway, those are all financials. Go ahead. Okay, here's the thing. When you say small, large cap, Matter of fact, I'll show you this in a minute, but you're taking the price per share times the number of shares outstanding. That's the market's assessment of the value of ownership in the company, the total value. I can show you companies that have, I won't even tell you what the cap of my company is, but I can show you these little smaller cap companies, they have a market cap of, say, $50 million. In other words, all of the shares at their current market price taken together would be $50 million. That's piddling. That's nothing. Then you have these giants of the earth. Let me show you one. I shouldn't do this yet, but I'm going to do it right now. Google. There's its market cap right there. $1.5 trillion. Let me ask you this, sir. Are you worth $1.5 trillion? And don't tell me your mother says so. You're not. You take the 10 largest companies on earth, you add up their market caps, you have more value in those companies than the total worth of almost everyone on planet Earth. That's how trivial we are. We are so small that they can't even step on us anymore and hurt us. That it is a scary thing that you are in a world. And this is something we're kind of talking about it almost on a philosophical level. You're seeing things like these pictures of the end of the universe and billions of galaxies, each with billions and billions of stars and even more planets. And here we are. We're nothing compared to that. We're nothing even compared to Google. And so if you think you're worth something, well, look at this a few times and you'll think, okay, maybe I'm not. So in other words, you don't try to think of yourself in these terms. You think of yourself in the terms of something different. Those corporations are going to shape the earth, but so can you, even, and that's what we call the butterfly effect. So don't despair, but do know that we're talking about values that are insane. And I mean, your ability to change the world, to affect the world, is really limited compared to the power of these companies to just simply make what they want. As a matter of fact, you may have already heard this. Do you know how to predict the future the best?
No.
You create it, okay? That's how these people, what these people are doing. They are creating the future. And if you could see what their plans are, they would frighten the hell out of you and inspire you beyond your wildest dreams. That's what we're dealing with here, okay? So finance may sound like a boring subject, and admittedly, it can be so tedious that you want, I mean, my last class, it's working capital management. How you optimize your receivables and payables. It's the kind of stuff where I actually have to make sure my kids aren't bringing razor blades into class to kill themselves. I mean, it's that bad. I mean, it's rough. It's boring, but it's not as boring as accounting, I'll give you that. I shouldn't say that. Yes, I should. Here's a commodity market. See crude oil? Crude oil swings, but it is way down from where it was. Last spring, I was showing how the market was pulling upward. I have many contacts in the industry, former students, you know, literally tens of thousands, and many of them are traders, and they tell me what the current sentiments are, and they were telling me it's going up, and I agreed with them. We got to about, there was a neckline they wanted to achieve of $125 a barrel. And of course, it finally made it to that, for God's sake. And of course, the gas price went through the roof, and everyone's blaming the politicians and all this kind of stuff. No, there were simple supply and demand dynamics going on. You cut off the oil supply from Russia, Ukraine, well, guess what's going to happen? The supply goes down, the price goes up. That's, you know, and how do you explain that to some hothead? I ain't paying no $5 a gallon for that. That's Biden's fault or something like that. No, it wasn't. For God's sake, lay off. I mean, I'm a conspiracy theorist, but these people these days just embarrass me. So now the price has settled back down. It was actually down as far as 88, about 88 bucks a barrel, and it's come back up. So you'll see the price of gasoline come back up. Now, it's not just oil doesn't make just gasoline. We have what are called the distillates as well, diesel, kerosene, jet fuels. And I used to work in oil and gas. That was one of my big things back in the day was I worked in with a small wildcat operation down in Texas, and we did you know that these markets are going to be volatile. Hell, I was in a market that was $25 a barrel, and I've seen the market up above $200 a barrel. It moves around just like everything else. People say, well, what do you think the stock market's going to do? And I tell you, I know it's going to fluctuate, and I'm always right about that. Same is true here. You notice how through the day, trading day today, let's look here at the S&P 500. Do you see how the bulls were? This is, by the way, these are called spark charts. If you don't know what they are, I'll show you. They're something you can do in Excel. It's like a little mini graph of data. And these spark charts just show what's happened today. You notice that there was some kind of information that made the bulls excited early in the trading. Now, we're actually near the end of the trading day now. But early on, from the opening bell, there was an immediate drop. And then it began, the bulls began to make a run. Moo! They were going happy. And then the bears came in, and they started smacking it down. What I would see here was that that was weak positive news. And eventually what happened was that the bulls sold what they had just to collect their profit. You know, quick trade kind of thing. And then they thought, well, here comes crap coming at us, so we're going to sell out, gather up our profits, and let the bears have their fun for the day. And that's why you saw that drop there around the midday. But notice here in the late trading, it's beginning to recover somewhat. The bulls are beginning, they saw that the prices went down enough so that there's some bargain hunting going on, so the bulls are coming back in modestly and picking up some of these stocks. One thing that happens in markets is that oftentimes when there's a surge down or a surge up, stocks that didn't deserve to be part of the surge take it with the rest of them. And that's like, for example, in a bear market, you'll have stocks that really don't deserve to go down for the day go down because everyone's selling everything. And so what you have later is that the bargain hunters come around, whoa, that one went down, that shouldn't have gone down, so they started picking those up. So you see that bargain hunting activity. On this side, what you saw there earlier in the trading day was that the market surged up, and there were probably some stocks that didn't really deserve to come up. They went up with them, so you grab those while they're coming up, and then you sell the hell out of them as soon as you smell the market turning a corner. But this is minute-to-minute, second-to-second activity. This is equilibrium on crack cocaine. You learn about equilibrium, the point where the quantity being supplied to the market is cleared by the quantity being demanded. That's the economics explanation. Well, this is happening every second of every day, and it's every day around the world. We in my business of investing and investment analysis are clockers. There is always trading going on. When the sun is going down on the West Coast, the sun is rising in Tokyo. And when the sun is beginning to set in Tokyo, it's rising on the bourses. That's the European word for exchanges in Europe. So there's always activity happening around the world. The clockers are never asleep. And there's always trading to be done somewhere in the world. Even when this market closes, there's going to be aftermarket trading. And when before the market opens tomorrow morning with that opening bell, there will be pre-market trading going on. You won't see it exactly. You don't see it, but it's there. Now, crude oil, same thing. Buying and selling of crude oil all the time, day in, day out, night and day, oil traders are working. And the same is true for all commodities, everything from wheat to hog bellies to treasury bills to stock market indices. Hell, there are even trading platforms for weather, of all things. There's trading in just anything you could imagine whatsoever. And so these commodity markets are always awake, always alive, always tapping the vein of the information flow. If information is 5 minutes old, it's worthless. You need to know what has just happened. So when an oil port was hit in Crimea, the market was just instant in its reaction to it. And then later, well, I saw this happen about an hour ago. I better go in and get some oil. No, that's too late for that, cupcake. You're done. The market has already reacted to that. We're on to the next thing. It's constantly hungry. It's a shark moving through the water looking for its next meal. It's forgotten what it ate for the last meal, which might have been you. But it doesn't remember your name. Sort of like Tinder. Gold. Gold is a weird-ass thing because it is, a lot of the time, the price movements are based upon speculators. Well, I see the economy is going to hell, so I'm going to buy me some gold. It's silver isn't that way as much. Silver has so many industrial uses. Its price movements, the commodity price movements, are much more based upon industrial and cosmetic supply and demand dynamics. It's not a speculator's market as much. There was a while back when these Reddit idiots were talking about silver being a good speculative investment, so it was popping around, and normal silver traders were saying, WTF, what's this about? Because their market is much calmer. And as you can see, do you notice that the dynamics are kind of the same, but notice the silver has been bearish all through the day. The bulls are trying to pull it up into positive territory before the bell. But notice that that's not the same as gold. Gold is being driven by speculators. It's always there. There are supply and demand dynamics going on as far as industrial production with gold and industrial and cosmetic production. But for the most part, it's a lot of speculators, and they're gold people are, I mean, I think the psychology term for them is weird ass. They have their own world of conspiracy theories and buying and hoarding gold and being afraid of the zombie apocalypse. They're odd. Be careful if anyone tries to get you into gold investments. Ask yourself, do I really need to buy gold, or should I just go to the doctor and get some meds? I'm not going to talk about, there are markets, currency markets, huge. If you get interested in this, and actually international finance is fun because we get to talk about politics and world economics, wars and rumors of wars. It's actually a fun course. And the math isn't that hard either. But that one's next semester if you want to walk on the wild side, FIL 341, which is the currency international finance course. And of course, international finance also has to do with other things besides markets like this. It has to do with government policies, changes of administrations. It has to do with the natural resource bases that are different for different companies. Right now, I'm bullish on Africa. I teach for the countries, several West African countries, and they are just ripe to become the next China. And the more we can control those markets, the more we can be the ones who help them, the more likely we are to benefit with them from their emergence from the third world and into the second world. It's exciting, this kind of stuff is. And the currency markets reflect the underlying dynamics of these different countries. So if you're interested in that kind of market, bonds. Here's a problem with looking at that bond chart. It's opposite. You see, what you're looking at are the yields. Now, yield and price are mathematically inverted. They are inverse. So when I see the bond, that green, that means the bond prices are actually falling. Investors are getting out of bonds. So it's weird. So I see that green, that's a bearish bond market. Now, here's what that means. Remember, bonds are safer than stocks. Stocks are going up. Bonds are going down. That's, in other words, investors are getting out of the risky stuff, the safe stuff, and they're going to the risky stuff. That is a very bullish sign. They're selling bonds and using the proceeds to buy stocks. If it happens the opposite way, if you see stocks falling but bond prices rising, we call that a flight to quality. A flight to quality is investors moving from riskier assets to safer assets. A flight to quality is investors moving from riskier assets to safer assets. A flight to quality is investors moving from riskier assets to safer assets. So we're seeing an inverse of the flight to quality. We're seeing the opposite of it. Now, suppose investors are scared. They'll sell stocks and they'll buy bonds. Suppose they're really scared. They'll sell stocks and bonds and move to gold. There's an old saying, from stocks to bonds to gold, from gold to bullets. Let's hope we don't get to that stage quite yet. I still haven't got my arsenal together. Okay, now, let me take you over here. Now, I will talk later a little bit about crypto. As I said, I want to teach you at least a basis of what blockchains are. But over here, here are two other indexes. These aren't exchanges. This is the FTSE. This is 100 ginormous stocks on the London Exchange. The FTSE is. So in other words, this is sort of like a sample of what's happening. And as you can see, the FTSE was bearish. Now, the FTSE has closed. The sun has gone down over there. The bell has rung. So as you can see, the FTSE was actually kind of bearish. But actually, if you notice, the bearish part came early in trading over there in London. And then it kind of climbed back out, the bulls grabbed some stuff, and it kind of bounced around. You see by the end, the bulls were beginning to try to grab up some. So by the end, you saw some hints of bullishness over there. Now, the Nikkei 225 is 225 ginormous companies, stocks as an index on the Tokyo Exchange. And whither go the 225, that's kind of a measure. The Tokyo Exchange is ginormous. It's a huge exchange. And I mean, you can see that right off the bat, the Japanese exchange, when it opened yesterday morning, it just went through it went down. And then it just kind of bounced and kind of wobbled. But do you notice by the end of the day, there was a little bit of a hint that there was going to be, the bears were beginning to grab a hold again over there. But then, of course, the sun went down. And then the sun rose in Europe and rose in London. And then the sun goes down in London. And the markets in the United States open up every day around the world. This is happening. And we're talking about, right now, quadrillions, nearly quintillions of dollars every friggin' day. Every day. A world that is beyond the comprehension of almost anyone. But you actually know about that. And I'm going to teach you about that world. The winds that are happening that the average Joe six-pack and Jane 12-pack, she has to live with Joe, so he has to drink more, they have no idea. Their ideas of conspiracies and plots and all that kind of stuff. You're talking about tiny things and people who have no education or little understanding having a say, thinking that they are geniuses when they pop off the top of their heads, or they listen to Alex Jones, or they listen to AOC, who know nothing of what we know. I'm trying to convince you that you are becoming different now. And if you want to be a common person, well, there's always ACE Trucking School. But if you're here, you get to be part of the leadership of the world who understands these winds and the winds of change. They happen at a level that is incomprehensible. I'm going to take you to one stock for the day just to do this, and then we'll move on to other stories next week. But give me a stock, and if you say Tesla, I will eat you alive. Anyone got one? Really? Rivian. Was it a bullish or a bearish day on Rivian today? You got to know this. Come on. Bull. Yes, it was bullish. You said bull. Bull. It was a bullish day. It was actually up 1.67%. That's a decent day. Look, anything above about 0.25%, you know, that's like a meh. But once you get up there above that, you're talking about there was serious interest. And it rode with the market. The market was bullish. Rivian was bullish. I mean, look at that, 52 cents. Well, that's not much. Yeah, but that was 1.67%. You put a couple of grand into that, it went up in one friggin' day, 1.67%. That's more than you can get at a bank on a whole year. So yeah, that's pretty decent for the day. And now you go through, and we'll do this every day until you're sick of it. Now it closed yesterday at 32.21. And today it opened at 32.47. You're saying, well, how did that happen? Because there's aftermarket and pre-market buy and sell orders. And those, it'll pop or it'll drop when those orders get filled at the opening. So the close and the open will not be the same, hardly ever. And that's the pre-market and post-market activity happening. You'll hear me say, you'll hear me use the terms post and pre. Bid and ask. The bid is what you can sell at. The ask is what you can buy at. There is almost always going to be a spread between bid and ask. So in other words, if you bought a share of Rivian, you'd buy it at $32.70, and if you decided to sell it a second later, you get $32.69 per share. You're saying, well, that's not fair. Like hell, it's not fair. I got to make my money some way as a broker. So I will buy stock at a lower price than I will sell it at. That's why you have to be careful. See that price up there at the top? That's just an average. It's probably an average that was there a few minutes ago anyway. The day swing is how much it's moved. That's this right here. It got up as high, it looks like, as about 32.72. And its low looks like it was about there at 32.43. Now over the 52 week, it has moved between 19.25 and 179.40. So would you say, just based on what you're seeing there, is this stock near its 52 week low or its 52 week high right now? 52 week low. Bingo. It's well down there. Now, I mean, what does that mean? Well, we know that this stock has the ability to get to $180 a share. It's shown that it can do that. So in other words, you fell off a building, 52-story, and you lived. Well, that was once you did that. I don't think I want to see you try it again. So, that 52-week high and low sort of give us a sense of necklines on the stock. And that's the term we use, kind of like these necklines, where it has shown its ability to get as low as something and its ability to get as high as something. So that might be an idea that, well, Rivian might be able to do that again. Is that a good way to invest? Probably not, but it's an encouragement for a belief in the company's stock's ability. Now, the average volume is how much happened today. I mean, the average is how much on a typical day this stock has traded. On an average day over the past year, it has traded about 16 million shares. Today, it traded only 8.2 million. So we would say that volume was light today based upon overall on balance volume. Well, that's the latest it's been today. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.